You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is Jay from Double Blanks Gaming. And Coach, you're listening to I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of Imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I am your host, Jedi Geek Girl. Joining me for this episode is the one, the only, from Double Blanks, Jay.
How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. I am so tired. There's a lot going on in Destiny. I'm in the middle of moving and wow, what a time to be alive, right?
I hear you. That sounds about right. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
It is such an honor to have you. I know I've been following you guys for the last 9 months, watching you guys grow, and I gotta say, it's been amazing.
Oh yeah, we have been very, very blessed with Double Blanks and how much it's actually grown and how much of a community we've built around it. And a lot of that goes to the viewers, like you supported us through the very beginning. We couldn't do it without everybody that watches.
It is one of the most unique podcasts out there that I am glad to support it. I know that it is not the most positive, but that's okay. It is one of the most honest, and you can't go wrong with honesty. That's for sure.
That's right. We try really hard to be very, like you said, honest and stick to what we know. We try to be entertaining at the same time, but we want to have a channel that you can relate to. We are not veteran card game players, and we're just your average Joe. And that's what we want our podcast to be about. A show that average players can relate to, rather than something that's always about what the meta looks like and how you can be competitive and how you can break this game and all that kind of stuff. We enjoy playing competitively and we enjoy going to regionals and going to store championships and all that kind of stuff, but we're realistic and we're not the best out there as far as being great at the game. We try our best and we enjoy playing that competitive scene, but we're just like all of you. Like, we're just average players. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and there's nothing wrong with not being the best player. In fact, it's probably more enjoyable as a gamer if you're not the best, because you're not high strung. You're not, you know, when you're into something and you lose the joy of it because you know about it. That is a good perspective to have out there. I know that besides that perspective, the entertainment value that you have in your podcast is so unique that I always find myself laughing, even if I disagree, you know?
Yes. That's what we want to do. We want to make people laugh and have a good time. And we want it to feel like you are in the room with us, sitting there playing Destiny, talking about Destiny, and just hanging out with us. That's what we strive to do.
How about yourself? Can you share with us a little bit about yourself?
Of course. I don't know if you guys want to know about this trash, but I'll let you know. I am a senior in college at Columbus State University. I live in LaGrange, Georgia, and I am majoring in computer science, specifically games programming, but I also do a lot of other stuff like database management and JavaScript and internet programming, all that kind of stuff. I worked in the ER for about 2 years with Chris, and my fiance is actually Chris's cousin. So that is how I met Chris. I started dating his cousin, and I am now engaged to her, and that is kind of how me and Chris started hanging out and stuff like that. We started doing board game night, and we actually ran a D&D campaign, well, it was Pathfinder, for about 2.5 years. We played in the same game together, and that's kind of how we just started hanging out all the time. I finally convinced Chris to try Star Wars Destiny with me about a month after it released, And that's when we started Double Blanks. I think I said I live in LaGrange, Georgia, so a very small town compared to where I was born in Orlando, Florida, and where I grew up in Daytona. That's about it. That's about all I got, Coach.
So basically, you're dating his cousin, and he got the pork that you wanted.
Yes, that's exactly. That is exactly how it should be described, mine and his relationship.
Do you think that is a fair trade-off, or?
If my fiancé is listening, then yes, 100%.
But anyways, you want to talk some Destiny?
Oh, definitely. I love me some Destiny.
I know in your last episode you talked about drafts. We'll get to that in a second, but regionals were announced. What do you think about the regionals announcement?
I think that it's awesome that we finally have some time and dates. Unfortunately, I would have rather gotten an FAQ before worrying about regionals, to be 100% honest with you.
I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, like, I don't even know what I should be practicing for my regionals. I got this first round bye, but I have no clue what I'm going to be playing. Is FN going to still be bonkers? Is Poe Maz going to still be as good as it is right now? I just don't know.
Right, and buyout might even get hit. I doubt it will get hit, but the possibility is a possibility to be redundant. So I know that I have a tournament coming up tomorrow at the time of this recording, and I'm taking Poe Maz version 2.0 because that is the deck that I know best, and it is the deck that I do not need a lot for. I would be running Sabine if I had Sabine, but I don't have Sabine Elite, and I also don't have another X2, so I want to take something that I know is decent and something that I know well without needing a lot of resources.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And if you play in a meta where you play with nothing but competitive players, where all they're going to bring is Kylo FN or Kylo Phasma or Cad Bane Phasma, then Poe Maz is definitely the choice to go with, if that's what you're playing with. But the meta that I'm in, none of us play those competitive decks, fortunately for me, because if everyone was just going to be playing Kylo FN and Cad Bane Phasma and Poe Maz and all of the best decks, Rainbow Nines, then I probably wouldn't even go to our weekly league nights. But everyone likes playing fresh ideas. Like, I have one guy that brings in Kanan Ahsoka one day. He'll bring in Kanan, two Padawans, or just something fun and fresh, rather than just trying to be competitive the whole time. I've not even played against a Thrawn car in person at one of our league nights.
Have you played against a deck online, though?
Oh, yeah, definitely online. TTS is riddled with people playing competitive decks.
Well, at least you handled that competitive scene a little bit better.
Definitely, definitely.
I know that it is a very vocal opinion of your co-host of the competitive scene. And I have to say that I can see a lot of where he's coming from with his frustration.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Specifically, the fact that FN has gone this long without an errata. Like, Poe Maz didn't go nearly this long without seeing errata. And then Kylo and Phasma just kind of put the icing on the cake, because they're two super strong, well-costed characters that fit perfectly with either FN or just other really strong characters. That kind of was the icing on the cake for it. You know what I mean?
Personally, I do not like FN over Poe Maz. Again, I'm biased, but it would help the game if FN was addressed sooner rather than later. It's kind of funny because we have a new set out, but the game seems a little stale to me.
Oh yeah, no, that's how a lot of people, you're not the only one. Tons of people feel that way right now. And I keep trying to tell Chris this, and I'll tell everyone this that feels that way. That's because just don't play in that competitive scene right now. There's no, I don't feel like there's a reason to. Until right now, we didn't even know when regionals are. So I guess you can use regionals as an excuse to play in that scene now. But even then, like, mine isn't until next March. That's like 6 months from now. I have no reason to be trying to practice decks when there's going to be at least two sets between now and then. Like, I'm just trying to have fun trying crazy, wild, different decks against other crazy, wild, different decks. I have so much more fun doing that. And that's why I think the draft is going to be so good for people that are like me that want to play casually without having to worry about FN or any of the insane tier 1 decks right now.
I have to say that is a wonderful segue. It's almost like you're a pro.
You would think so, right?
Bringing us into draft, what do you think about the draft set? I mean, how excited are you for the new format?
Oh, I'm super excited for both sealed and draft. For all of the negatives that people can take out of it, I'm still super excited for this. Like, it is exactly my style of play. I want to be able to prove I can build a deck and do well with it outside of having to face off against a FN or Po Maz or Rainbow Nines or whatever. I think it's perfect and exactly what Destiny needs right now.
I agree with you 100% again. It is one of my favorite formats to play. It is also one of the best ways to get product because you're buying product and you're playing in a tournament to potentially win more product. You don't have to worry about buying singles to build a deck and then playing in a high stress environment where you might be at a disadvantage because you can't afford Ancient Lightsabers or Sabine or Thrawn. You're on the same playing field. I mean, sure, somebody might pull a Thrawn, but you still have a strong chance of pulling something to help balance that, where you don't get that opportunity to do that in Constructed.
Exactly. And it's like, if they pull Thrawn, it's going to be one die Thrawn. And do you really want to play one die Thrawn?
I would. And CL, think about it. You can run single die Thrawn, single die Anakin, and a Jawa.
This is definitely true. That's what I like about Sealed. It's like, you can play stuff like that. What am I talking about over here?
Not only that, but one of the things that I am most excited for Limited, is it makes single die characters a lot more relevant. Instead of looking at a character and looking at its elite cost, like a lot of people are doing, you now look at the single die cost in Limited, because it's very unlikely that you'll pull an elite version. It's possible, but it's not likely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's actually a very good point, because one of the decks I've been playing a lot with in the past couple days, and I have a lot of videos that are going to be posted in the next few days about this deck, is one die Qui-Gon and Elite Soka. And I think one die Qui-Gon is super good because they're not going to go for him. They're going to go for your elite character, so Ahsoka in this case. And you're going to be just pinging tons of damage. And I think his ability is better than having a second of his die. That's, I think, is a very good point for draft, because you're going to be able to see what these characters can do with one die. And no one ever plays one die high-cost characters, like Vader and Luke and stuff like that.
That is a very good point. What do you think of the cards revealed?
I'm excited. I'm always excited to see new cards, right? But when I look at Anakin and I see that they gave him two shields and they gave for heroes, but two damage for villains, I just want to, like, strangle whoever designed that card. Because it's two shields is nothing compared to two damage. Like, if it would have been heal two damage, I totally would have been on board. That would have been so much better than two shields. But two shields is not the equivalent of two damage. I'm sorry. And constructed, anyway. That's what I'm talking about, in constructed. Now, in draft, that's a completely different story, because your opponent's probably not going to draft a Vibrant Knife. And if they do, they're only going to have one in their deck, so you have a chance of your shields being worth something at least halfway through the game. So I think in drafted, shields will be so much better than they are in constructed.
Anakin is probably my favorite card that was revealed. However, it is both good and bad, in my opinion. I think it is good because now heroes get access to a powerful, cheap character at 10-13, perfect for Qui-Gon Jinn and other 17-cost characters. Bad because villains get another cheap, powerful, strong character at that cost. Now, with the shield and healing, I was listening to your guys' podcast, and you made a really good point that it would be better to heal instead of shields. However, with heals and shields, there's a lot of combo potential. And I think that if FFG can crack that code, shields can be very potent. Yes, Vibroknife is still in the meta, but if Blue Heals got a way to deal with Vibroknife, like a compensation or a disarm or some way to get rid of Vibroknife, I think you would see a shift towards shields being a lot more viable.
Definitely. I agree with that.
I know as a Pomaz player, shields are very hard to get around. If the meta could change to having less answers to shields, obviously you would see shields being more relevant and stronger. I see what FFG is doing. It's just that we're not to the point where shields are viable in the competitive deck strategy outside of limited and certain deck matchups.
I think the problem is, like, it's a rock, paper, scissors. Because if you're playing against ranged, shields are amazing and they're very frustrating for your opponent. First round, you play against a ranged deck, you crush them because you stay alive the whole game. Next round, you sit down, turn one, they throw down a Vibroknife on Darth Vader. Now, what are you going to do? It's very rock, paper, scissory, and that's the problem with shields. Now, you could probably build a shield deck with decent amount of shield cards if there was a set-aside zone where you could swap cards in and out between rounds. Then shields, I think, would have more of an impact. Because if you know you're playing against a melee deck, swap those shield cards out, put in more damage cards, stuff like that. But I don't know if we'll ever have a set-aside zone. I totally see what you're saying, because shields are very strong outside of Vibroknife. If Vibroknife didn't exist or Vibroaxe, then shields would just dominate. And that's not what we want.
I think that is why we have the Vibro weapons. But when a game is in its infancy, you know, sometimes things get overlooked. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of sets from now we get a more balanced answer. Personally, I'm not so anti-Vibroknife because I find that it is annoying. It's really annoying playing against. But I don't see the problems with it, like an FN, obviously, but that's a little bit extreme. But you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I totally understand.
I mean, it is an answer that we need. It might be too strong of an answer, but it is an answer. Hopefully there would be like a plot card to help with shields or something like that. Like your shields absorb one extra damage or that would be too strong.
Yeah, like unblockable damage, you can block at least one of it or something like that.
There you go, maybe like a plot card that costs one or two, your shields block unblockable damage.
Yeah, that would be gnarly. That would be insane.
Because you won't use it in every matchup, basically only against Vibroknife and other ways to do direct damage, which right now there's not a lot. So it might not be good in every matchup. So if you're running Qui-Gon and you have that plot card and you're playing a ranged deck, that plot is going to be useless, but if you play against a melee deck with Vibroknife, it might help.
Yep. Yeah, I could see that being something.
That would be very interesting. But bringing it around to melee, let's talk about your favorite character.
And who is my favorite character?
Mace Doggy Dog Dog.
Mace Windu Doggy Dog Dog, that's right. I love Mace Windu. He is one of my favorite characters in the set.
Before we get to the card and the decks that you play him with, let's talk about the character himself. Why do you like him so much?
first, it's because it's Sam L. Jackson, and I absolutely love Sam L. Jackson as an actor, from Pulp Fiction, all of the Quentin Tarantino movies he plays, like The Django, and what's the newest one that just came out? The Hateful Eight? Yeah, The Hateful Eight. I love all of Sam L. Jackson's movies. Unbreakable. He's just awesome. He's such a cool actor. You know his voice when you hear him, like in The Incredibles. Where is my super suit? He has a presence. That is something very appealing in an actor, when they have a presence. From voice to when they walk into the room to... He's one of my favorite actors. Mace Windu is also a super cool character. He is the master of the council. So you know he's totally BA. He's awesome. He basically defeats Palpatine in hand-to-hand combat, while his other two Jedi masters get slain immediately. He's got a purple lightsaber. He's the only one with the purple lightsaber that we see in the movies anyway. He's just an awesome character. He knows what the Jedi Code is, but he's willing to break what he knows in order to bring justice and bring balance to the Force. And that's why I like him. He's awesome.
Speaking of his lightsaber, are you aware of what he has on the hilt of his lightsaber?
I am not. What does he have?
He has a bad MF-er.
Oh yeah, I did hear about that. That is awesome. That makes him even that much better.
Did you also know that he originally was going to have a blue lightsaber?
Yes. I know that Sam L. Jackson's favorite color is purple, and he always asks to have a purple item in his movie that he plays. And he asked George Lucas if he could have a purple lightsaber, and George Lucas originally said no. But then he came around to it and decided to give him one, and I can't remember why exactly he decided to do it.
Well, probably because of Samuel L. Jackson, and you don't want to mess with Samuel L.
That's right. That is right.
Are you familiar with Mace Windu in the Legend/Canon expanded stuff?
A little bit. Not too much. I've recently picked up on more of the actual canon, following the canon stuff from comic books to the new movies to the new books like Aftermath, the trilogy, and the Battlefront book. And I haven't read a whole lot of the older stuff as far as EU. So what do you think about Mr. Mace Windu?
I think he is a very interesting character. I'm not drawn to him. There's a lot to be discovered about him. He is definitely someone who you do not want to mess with. He is somebody who is calm, collective, and has a presence about him. I don't know. I guess I was never really drawn to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you.
It seems like he doesn't have much of a personality compared to like an Obi-Wan or Anakin or Plo Koon or Kit Fisto or even Yoda, obviously. He just seemed kind of hard to read, and outside of the movies, not a whole lot. I mean, he did take Palpatine to the edge, and that was pretty cool. And it was pretty impressive given the fact that Samuel is not trained in sword fighting, and Palpatine was an old man fighting, so they did pretty well with what they had.
Definitely. And he chops off Jango's head, Jango Fett's head.
And another piece of trivia for you. Did you know that Boba Fett was originally going to kill Mace Windu in episode 3?
And they didn't do it, did they?
And you know why?
Why? I know Samuel Jackson didn't want to be killed off.
By a punk kid.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. That is hilarious.
How awesome would it have been if that actually happened?
The problem I would have had with that is Boba Fett's character as a kid was kind of not a cool character. If they would have made him more of like a cooler character for a kid, then I could have seen it. It would have been cool. But the Boba Fett that they had is the equivalent of the Anakin kid from Kid Anakin from episode 1.
Before we move on to the card, I would like to recommend a couple pieces of literature for you to read about the character if you are interested. Number one, there's a legend book called Shatterpoint. It dives into the Shatterpoint technique, which Mace Windu is behind. It also dives into Dapa Balaba. I highly recommend it. It is legend, so it's not canon, but it really dives into Mace Windu and the technique. You remember in the Clone Wars when there's a trooper stuck in a walker and he puts his hand on the glass and he shatters it?
Yeah, I remember that.
That is the Shatterpoint technique. The Shatterpoint technique is finding your weakness and then exploiting it.
Okay.
So it really adds a lot more depth into the character than what is already out there. So I highly recommend that.
I'll need to read that then. That sounds awesome.
And the second thing is there is an ongoing Mace Windu comic, and it's in its second issue right now.
Yeah, it just started not that long ago, right?
It did.
Yeah, I need to check that out. I have the Vader ones and most of the Lando ones. Obviously, I don't know the Lando one very well because I didn't know Lobot's quote, but I have a lot of the comic books from when they first started.
I recommend Marvel Unlimited because you only pay $10 and you can read all the comics up until 6 months of the date that you're on there, and then you can unsubscribe when you're done. So
nice. Yeah, I need to look into that.
But anyways, let's move into the card so we can explore this character even further.
Totally. I think he's extremely underestimated.
Alright, let's get into that. I agree with you, but why do you think that he is underestimated?
He has a foreside. he has 3 damage sides, so you're gonna be doing damage from the get-go. It's his pairings that make him decent, right? There's 3 pairings that are popular with him. It's Maz, Rebel Trooper, and Padawan. While my favorite one is Padawan, it's probably the hardest one to play, especially with new Kylo. I really enjoy monocolor decks and all of the combos that they give to monocolor decks, specifically Blue Hero. But it's just too difficult to play monocolor decks with new Kylo running around out there, especially since he's one of the main meta decks right now.
It might be the hardest to play, but it seems like it is the strongest.
Definitely. It would be with new Kylo out of the picture. It's definitely the strongest out of all 3 of them by far. Padawan helps with resources and can be a late game threat, while Maz and Rebel Trooper are not the late game threat that you need.
Here is why I think Mace Windu is underestimated. I think his cost is one of the reasons why people underestimate him. I think people think he is cost too highly. But once you factor in his die size and his ability and his health, you almost have to go with his point cost because of how strong he is. If it was any less than what it is, I think people would be really exploiting him.
Oh yeah, yeah. If he was any less, he'd be probably insane. Even if he was just 1 less, there are 9 cost characters like Rey. Yeah, that would just make him way too strong.
Exactly. Another thing is I think people wrote off his ability. I actually like his ability because your dice are 2 damage. I should say kill a character when your opponent's character is less than 2.
Yeah, so it could be more than 2 damage, really.
It can, yes, exactly. The ability to kill a character just by removing a die, no matter what it shows, is so strong.
Yeah, his ability is criminally underestimated. By far. I've used it way more than I expected at first, and way more than people were saying that it's worth. Like, I use it all the time. For example, if one of your opponent's characters has 2 health left, all you have to do is roll out, and you're going to kill them. No matter what you roll, you're going to kill that character. They can shield them up. They can play dug in. They claimed so they could play dug in and try to keep them alive longer. Well, you have Mace Windu. You roll in and kill them no matter what. I think the strongest part about his ability is people forget about it. Everyone forgets what Mace Windu's ability is. And you use all the damage sides you have on your board. Mace's other die is showing a blank. You get your opponent down to either one or two health. And they're like, all right, let me shield up. He's going to be fine no matter what. And then you use his ability. And they're like, oh, I forgot about that. That's probably the strongest part of his ability. People forget.
You know, when I played this matchup, I was playing Thrawn Unka. That was something I was watching. Because when you play against Mace Windu and they swing a lot of damage, you're like, oh my god, this deck deals a lot of damage. And you're like, I am watching my opponent's dice and I am controlling them because I do not want my character to get less than 2 health because of Mace Windu's ability.
Yep, you have to, you cannot sleep on that ability. I'm telling you, it is way better than people give it credit for.
So let's move into the decks. I think Mace Windu Padawan, like we said, is the strongest and a lot of time has been devoted to it. I would like to touch upon the other two. Mace Windu with cheese, and Mace Windu, I guess we call it a Bloody Mace.
Yeah, a Bloody Mary. That is funny. Yeah, so definitely Padawan's the strongest, but Mace with Rebel Trooper, I've actually not tried personally, but I can see where its draw is. So a lot of people, like the Guardian, will keep Mace alive longer. Basically, it makes Mace a 19 health character in the long run, unless they just absolutely burst you before you can Guardian the damage. The Rebel Trooper's Guardian really, really helps keep Mace alive. But it doesn't have the synergy Padawan has. It opens up to red, which is good. So you get Honor Guard. And I think a lot of people play the Docking Bay with Honor Guard in that deck. Because usually Mace decks are super fast. You have two characters and one of them is Mace. So you roll out and resolve your damage and that's pretty much your turn. So you play Honor Guard, you get to mitigate a die, and then you claim and get Honor Guard back out. And basically you get to mitigate at least one die every turn. And that's a strong play, and I think that also helps keep Mace alive. But Rebel Trooper isn't doing anything for you with that range damage. I think it's got its tricks. Logistics helps if you roll that resource on Rebel Trooper to get more upgrades out and stuff like that. See, the way I play Mace and the way I think you have to play Mace is you have to try to get as many upgrades out as possible, turns 1 and 2, and then you just roll out Mace and you hit for like 15 damage. Because you can easily do that with the Mace deck. You roll out 2 4s and a plus 4 on Master of the Council, that's already 12 damage right there, which is 3 dice. Or roll out 2, 4, plus 3. And then you got a Vibranife out there showing a 1. And you got Padawan out there showing a 1. That damage stacks up. And I think ramping up upgrades as fast as possible is the way you have to play Mace. Because he's going to be dead at the latest turn 3. 12 health is not enough.
And with red, you are playing a more defensive version of the deck instead of a more aggressive version with blue. I think that if you play him with Royal Guard, if you want to take that approach, you will almost have to go all in on the defense. Your field medic, your dug in, your honor guard, your guardian ability. And I think it is quite, I actually think the deck strategy is quite decent. I don't think it's the best strategy, but I think it's decent. You know, you have a beast of Mace Windu beating you down and you're healing and you're defending and you're guardian. But defense don't always win plays. You know, I'm not a sports person, but you know the analogy. It's viable and it's good to have defenses, but sometimes you need to go all in on your offense. I think the Bloody Mace deck is intriguing and it's interesting, especially with Kylo in the format, but if you want to go all in, you're paying 22 points. You want to go all in on your aggression.
Yep, and for me personally, of the three, this one's probably the most boring to play to be honest. Yeah, like, I it's not thematic, because it's a rebel trooper. And rebel trooper just is boring to play to me. He's not interesting. Yeah, he's got guardian for you, but personally, it's not as fun to play that style where you're playing defense and all that kind of stuff as it is to play Padawan and just go all out with Destiny and the Master of the Council, Raze Lightsaber, Fiber Knives, and just trying to do as much damage as fast as possible. That's how I like to play Mace Windu.
Let's talk about the Mace Windu with cheese.
Oh yeah, Mace with cheese. I like that name.
This is version of the deck that I hear talked about the least, because I don't think that it is good. There's nothing that I can think of that makes the deck an option. You have Maz. You could do Ezra as well, but what else are you bringing to the table with yellow outside of maybe negotiate Lost Cat and Mouse? I mean, you're bringing control, but your control relies on your dice. There isn't a whole lot you're bringing to the table with yellow.
Now, see, I think that Mace Maz is probably... I like it better than Rebel Trooper. I've actually played the Mace Maz version a few times on YouTube. I think Mace Maz is probably better because if you hit the focus with Maz's ability, then excellent, right? You get to focus into a 4 and do 4 damage. Or you get to focus into a 4, not resolve it, and then Destiny, a Master of the Council out. It makes it easier for you to get those kinds of plays off. And if you'd roll a blank or a shield or something you don't want, you have your negotiate. You don't care about that Maz die anymore, so you have your negotiate to remove two of their dice. And if you can go ahead and resolve your mace dice, usually other decks are slower than this one, so it's very possible. Go ahead and resolve your other dice and then play Loth, Cat, and Mouse and remove that Maz die that you don't care about. So I think there are definitely plays there. And probably the key to Mace Maz is there's a card called Impersonation, where you stack up probably about 6, 7, maybe even 8 health on Mace. And you play that 2-cost Impersonation, and you move all that damage to Maz. It could be up to 8 damage, but if you only do 7, that's just as good. And you get a full health Mace, and now you have a almost dead Maz. But you don't care, because you'd rather have your Mace than your Maz. It opens up to Long Con, which can be a huge game ender for Mace. Especially if you're able to Destiny out a Master of the Council. But if you can't Destiny out Master of the Council, in a couple turns you can have a Vibra Knife and a Raze Lightsaber out there, easy. And then you Long Con into either another upgrade, or you Long Con into resetting Mace. Stuff like that. I think it opens up a lot of options with yellow. And Maz's ability is just super good to be able to hit that focus and resolve 4 damage.
I think you bring up a lot of solid points, especially with Impersonate. That is something I didn't think of. However, when I think of that deck, I just rather run Pole Maz.
Yeah, no, I that would probably be better, right? But it's not Mace Windoggy Dog.
That's true. And it's a lot better than pairing him with Ezra.
Mm-hmm. I would never pair him with Ezra. Not in a million years.
That would conclude a long-form discussion of Mace Windu. I hope you had a blast talking about your favorite character.
Oh, I definitely did. I definitely did.
It is now time for us to address our weekly Facebook feedback. Nick asks, are they starting to rush out product too quickly?
Chris has a strong opinion about this. He feels like they're pushing out too much content. It wouldn't be too much if they had a FAQ, but he's irritated that they're pushing out more of their stuff and not any more rules updates or rules reference updates. And I think that's what really pushes it over the top. It was only 2 weeks after Empire at War dropped that they announced a new set, and that feels kind of early. I'm still trying to enjoy myself with this new Empire at War set, and then all of a sudden I see, oh, there's another one. And then 2 weeks after that, they announce draft set. with two new starters and the legacy box set, plus pack you have to buy for draft, I could see where it feels like there's a lot coming out. Especially for someone like me, like, I'm going to be broke. There's no way I'm going to be able to buy all this stuff. Not in a million years.
I agree, and a lot of people share that view. I think a lot of people who are now playing Star Wars Destiny came into the game under the impression that every set was going to be released every 4 months, and then they find out that another set is rumored to be dropped not only in 3 months, but there is an additional set coming out approximately about the same time that they have to buy for draft.
Yep. It just feels like a lot.
And while I can understand that perspective, and it is very valid of a perspective to have, personally, I come from a CCG background, so this is nothing. The other CCGs, they have product released quite frequently. The main set is released every 3 months, and then with Magic, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh!, you have like a deluxe box. Pokemon, you have mini sets, I think twice a year or once a year now. I don't know what it is. And Yu-Gi-Oh! I think it's two mini sets. This is nothing. The other CCG's games, it's a lot more product, especially if you are a collector. But not everybody who plays Destiny is a CCG player who is familiar with other CCGs. So if you are going all in on a set like I am, it can be quite overwhelming. However, it is a CGG, so you can always pick and choose what you want to buy. You don't always have to buy every single card. You can buy a card for maybe two decks, and then you should be fine.
Yeah, and I think, like, as much as it feels like they're pushing out a lot, I'm always happy to see new cards and new sets, so it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people. And the only issue I have with it is I think they should have probably waited a whole month after the release of Empire at War, when people are starting to kind of die down a little bit, and then release it. And I think a lot more people would be more excited that a new set was coming out so soon. That's kind of my opinion. I have no problem with another set coming out. Like, it doesn't bother me any. I always like having new cards to be able to play with.
I can agree with that. They could have waited maybe a week or two more before releasing it. I actually addressed this issue on the iRebel Facebook page, where someone asked a specific question, and I brought up the fact that this actually will bring them up to schedule, because Awakening came out in December last year, and Spirit of Rebellion didn't come out until May, because they were delayed because of the lack of product. So, Spirit of Rebellion got released later than they would have liked. That pushed the schedule back. You had 5 months between Awakenings and Spirit of Rebellion. Between Spirit of Rebellion and Empire at War, you had 4 months. And then between Empire at War and Legacies, that's 3 months. While it is a decrease, the release schedule is the same as if they were on time. Them releasing product too quickly might just be them being back on schedule. So this may actually be a good thing that it's coming out so quickly, because that means they're back on schedule.
Yep. Yep. I see that. I can see what you mean.
Moving on to our next question. Jimmy asks, what makes a deck good?
What makes a deck good? That is a tough question. There are so many things that make a deck good. That's what CCG players have been asking themselves since the creation of the first CCG, right? Like, what can make this deck good? I think in Star Wars Destiny, what makes a deck good is synergy. Synergy with the cards, from characters to die faces. There's a lot that goes into deck building and what actually makes a deck good. For example, Rainbow Nines is a good deck because the characters pair perfectly with each other. Night Sister has the perfect ability to pair with FN's ability. Meanwhile, Bala gets to have a really good ability that once all those weapons redeploy from FN to Bala, he gets to reset. He gets to do damage, more than likely reset, because FN has been putting work in all game. And That's the kind of things you have to look for, is synergy between your characters and between the cards that you have in your deck.
That question is a loaded one indeed. What makes a deck good for you might not make a deck good for me, and so on and so on and so on. It's a very subjective question. For me, what makes a deck good is, well, it has to win, for one. Number two, it has to be a deck that I like to play.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is a negative play experience for someone else, I have to enjoy it. Number three, it has to be a deck that isn't repetitive. It's actually why I really like Thrawn Unkar, because every game, even though you're playing control and you want to mill, your situation isn't always the same because your opportunities to control are in different environments. So while you might control a Vibroknife die in one matchup, you might not want to control the same die on the same character in another matchup. So it is a very loaded question, and your answer is going to vary from person to person, but ultimately it all comes down to what your description of good is. If a deck is good for you, then that's fantastic.
That's what matters in the long run, right?
Exactly. So moving on to our last question, and this is another huge question.
This is.
Suki from Knights of Ren asks, what are your thoughts on the casual community? How can we help incorporate them into a community that appears on the surface to be highly competitive and less community-minded at times?
The easy answer is tell them to check out Double Blanks.
And you will bring them around to the Mace Windy Doggy Dog.
Yep, that is right. Actually, Double Blanks Discord and the Double Blanks community as a whole has just been super awesome. There's so many casual... I hate the label of casual, because you can be competitive, but not want to play in a competitive scene, right? Like, I enjoy playing competitive tournaments, but I don't want that to be all that I do. Whereas Chris, on the other hand, he's a competitive-minded player, and all he wants and enjoys doing is playing competitively. No matter how much he can gets upset with the way the game is right now, that's what he enjoys to do, and that's what he puts himself into. I think the community around Double Blanks tends to be more casual. While there are tons of competitive players that I talk to and hang out with, there's just, I don't know, something awesome about it. There's no right answer for how to bring in more casual players. I think draft is a fantastic way to bring in casual players. There are plenty of people that would play a game like this knowing there's a draft for it. Because then you ain't got to worry about all of the crazy meta decks. So I think one answer for that question would be draft. Wait for the draft to come out. Bring them to a draft night and be like, this is Star Wars Destiny. This is fun. This is what we like to do. As far as some other way, I'm not 100% sure. It's hard to give a good answer for that.
It is a very loaded question, indeed. My thoughts on the casual community is that they are very important. It is very disheartening how I see the casual community being treated online. When they ask a question from a point of innocence about a ruling or a card or whatever you and I might laugh at, it should be addressed and respected instead of mocked and made fun of. If you were new to a game or new to whatever, a job or marriage or children, and you ask a question that you genuinely know nothing about and someone laugh at you or made fun of you or insult your intelligence, how would you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I see people ask questions on there and just get hammered. And I just don't understand why. As a content creator, I try to stay out of stuff like that as much as possible. So I don't say anything about it, but I totally know what you're talking about. Like, some people just rag on somebody for asking a very simple question. And all they want to do is know. Like, they're not hurting anybody asking that question. It's, come on, they're trying to learn the game that we all love and all enjoy, and we shouldn't do anything to cause them not to want to join this community.
Exactly. And the casual community, I think, is the majority. When I go to a tournament, the majority of the people there are people who I would classify as casually competitive. That's also how I classify myself, where they're competitive, but they're more casual with their competitiveness. And if we isolate the casual community and we do not expand it, then we don't have a large tournament to play in. If we went to Gen Con and it was only competitive players, you might have, what, 20, 30, at most 50-person tournament instead of a 200-person tournament. That brings me to the next point in the question, is how can we incorporate them. Is, I hate to say this, but stay away from the larger Facebook group, because whenever you're in a larger group, you're going to get singled out. This happens in your Star Wars Facebook groups, your Doctor Who Facebook group, your nerd thing. Anytime you hit over a certain amount of people, you are exposed to a larger amount of people who aren't always as open to your suggestions or idea. I think the best way we can incorporate them is to welcome them and create resources as a community for them to access. And I think your podcast is actually one of the best resources that we have out there, because I find myself, from a competitive point of view, disagreeing with what you have to say sometimes, but I realize that that's okay, because there are casual people out there, but you know what? It doesn't matter if you know the value of a die or not. If you want to play Luminara Ray or something, you know what? You go do it, because, you know, you be you, and we as a community need to help incorporate the casual community, because like children, they are the future of this game.
Totally.
I know that there is initiative in the community to try to help incorporate the casual player. I am optimistic that a year from now, not only will Destiny be bigger, but as a community, we will be a lot more friendly to your casual / newer player.
Yep. And there's always going to be those people out there that are elitists. There's elitists in every subject, from left field to right field. There's always going to be your squad of elitist people. Try to avoid them. That's the only way to get around it. And if you see new people coming into your game store wanting to play Destiny or wherever you game, whether it's like a game store or I don't know, wherever, and you see new people, try to be as friendly as possible to them and grab them before they get disheartened from the elitist group. Because that's the last thing that we need, is more people disheartening new casual players.
I agree 100%. Before we wrap this up, I just want to put this idea in your head. But what do you think about Mace Windu fighting Kylo Ren?
That would be hilariously awesome.
And with that imagery, we're going to wrap up this episode of I Rebel. Thank you, Jay, for coming on and talking some Destiny with me.
No problem. I really appreciate you having me on.
It was so much fun.
Super fun.
Before we let you go, if people want to contact you, where can they find you?
We are Double Blanks Gaming on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're Double Blanks Gaming podcast on Shout Engine and iTunes, and I don't know where else we're at as far as listening to us. Google Play, maybe. And we have a Discord channel for Double Blanks Gaming. So any of those places, you can find us and talk to me if you wish. I try to be as active as possible with responding to emails, messages, comments on YouTube, all that kind of stuff. So it's hard, because us content creators are busy, busy, busy dogs, but I try to find my time to be able to talk with the community.
That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time.
This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you. I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.